Good morning. The next case on our calendar today is A22-1018, State of Minnesota versus Bert Strom. We are hearing oral arguments by Zoom today. As you're aware, counsel, you should be able to see the timer in the grid view. Counsel will each have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and counsel for appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. We are recording the oral argument today, and I'll just remind anyone who's viewing that recordings of our oral arguments are not allowed without the express prior permission of the Court of Appeals. The recording by the Court of Appeals should be available on our website within 24 hours. So with that, counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready, and I'll ask that you identify yourself and the party you represent.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Lynn Torgerson, T-O-R-G-E-R-S-O-N, on behalf of Bert Strom, the appellant. May it please the court. Your Honor, in this case, Mr. Strom is 52 years old. He's married, has been married over 1 year until the probation revocation hearing. Mr. Strom, his wife, and his children were residing together in Monticello, Illinois. At that time, Mr. Strom had obtained 100% physical custody of his children. Mr. Strom also owns a home in Tyler, Minnesota, which is about 24 miles from Marshall, Minnesota. Mr. Strom grew up in Lind, Minnesota, and attended high school in Marshall, Minnesota. He did graduate from high school, and he has obtained some higher education. In approximately 1992 to 93, Mr. Strom attended Pipestone Votek. His area of emphasis was cosmetology, and he did obtain his license at that time. From June 2021 until he was sentenced on about June 22, the year 2022, Mr. Strom was taking a medical courting course. His career plans are to move back to his home in Minnesota, put an office in his home, and do this sort of work out of his home office.
So the panel is familiar with the briefs and the factual background in this case. You can help focus us in on your legal arguments and what you think is your strongest legal argument for reversal in this case.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Before you begin, as I understand your briefing, you're not challenging the first two Austin factors. It's just the last one. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, I wanted to make sure I was clear on that. Thank you.
Thank you. In 2006, Mr. Strom did complete alcohol treatment. He doesn't use illegal drugs until the revocation. He had been seeing a counselor. The pertinent case here is a 2016 felony third degree assault conviction out of Lyon County, which is the instant case. The facts were essentially that Mr. Strom pushed his ex-wife. She fell down the stairs and her wrist was fractured. In the 2016 case, he received a stay of imposition of sentence and was placed on probation for 3 years. And then in or about July 18th, while on probation, he went to Illinois for the purposes of helping his now ex-wife, the victims, in both cases, moved back to Minnesota. That interaction resulted in a new domestic assault conviction in Illinois for which he was convicted and served an executed prison term of 15 months. In that case,
as I read your brief, it seems like your primary argument, or one of them, is that, you know, there was no need to have additional consequence here in the form of revocation of his stayed sentence, because he was held accountable in Illinois for the most significant of the four probation violations. Is that your argument?
Your Honor, I would say that's part of the argument. I think the main argument is that he was released from prison in 2019 and was on parole for almost 3 years at the time of the probation violation hearings, which he initiated and had been trying to get held for 3 years. And during the 3 years, he was a model parolee. And the test in this case is whether the evidence, the need for confinement outweighs the policies favoring probation. So there's policies favoring probation, and the state had to show that the need for confinement outweighed those policies. And the evidence...
How did the district court err by concluding that your client's four probation violations that included violent conduct with respect to the victim of the crime for which he was on probation didn't indicate that the need for confinement outweighs the policies favoring probation?
Because he had been doing exceptionally well on parole for 3 years. Mr. Strom introduced evidence that he did not have any parole violations, that he was regularly attending counseling, that he obtained gainful employment, that he obtained custody of his two children, that he had his children in family counseling. He was attending AA. He had passed all of his drug and alcohol tests. He had completed a dual substance abuse anger management assessment. He was taking schooling courses for medical coding, laying a foundation for new gainful employment. He had remained law-abiding. He had gotten remarried, and he had done so well that his parole officer in Illinois stated that he was going to discharge Mr. Strom from parole early, and he submitted a letter so stating.
I have a question for you. One of the admonitions from the Austin court is that district court judges can't have a reflexive reaction to an accumulation of technical violations. And my question for you is, do you think that the violations that were outlined in the probation violation report, do you think they were technical violations?
Absolutely not. It was a substantial, or the all the violations were substantial, but the main issue, I mean, the test is under the evidence whether at the time of the probation revocation hearings, the need for confinement outweighs the policies favoring probation. And in this case, the evidence showed by, I would say, clear and convincing evidence that there was no need for confinement. The part that he had already served 15 months shows that the failure to execute a sentence would not unduly depreciate the seriousness of the violations because he had already served 15 months. I think it is contrary to policy that Mr. Strom had, under the evidence, completely rehabilitated himself. And the law does say that, you know, the purpose of probation is rehabilitation, and revocation should be used only as a last resort when treatment has failed. And so it's just, if a person rehabilitates himself during the delay, there was a 3-year delay that actually can only be attributed to the state.
I understand the state's argument in that regard. It was attributed to your client because he committed a crime in Illinois for which he was on parole and had to remain in Illinois until that he had satisfied his parole. Am I wrong about that?
Well, the issue there, Your Honor, is that Minnesota issued a warrant. And if there's a warrant in under his Illinois parole, he couldn't leave the state while there was a warrant. So he actually asked for Minnesota to drop the warrant so that he could come back for the hearing. And that's actually what was accomplished when I filed this motion last summer, is they dropped the warrant and then he could come back to Minnesota and it wouldn't violate his parole. But so he had asked that previously for them to drop the warrant and then he could come back and enter the state of Minnesota and have the hearing. But I think it goes against policy for there to be a 3-year delay. He completely rehabilitates his life and then they finally hold the hearing. And in the interim, he did serve 15 months in prison and did exceptionally well on parole. And then to revoke it at that late date is an abuse of discretion. And
also, I was just gonna ask you about the standard of review. You agree that it's abuse of discretion?
Yes, Your Honor.
And it appears in reviewing the transcript that the district court did consider both the negative actions of Mr. Strom and also the good. So,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So given the deferential standard of review, how do you suggest that the district court abused its discretion in knowing that the district court considered all of the evidence?
Well, Your Honor, the district court declared that it considered all the evidence, but its conclusion is inaccurate. The conclusion was and is greatly inaccurate. The conclusion of the court was that based on the evidence, the need for confinement outweighed the policies favoring probation. And the great weight of the evidence in this case is that there was no need for confinement. There was no need to confine him in the summer of or June of 2022. And I have to apologize.
That wasn't the only thing that the district court considered as I read through the record. The district court also considered that failure to revoke probation would unduly depreciate the seriousness of the violations, which you've already acknowledged were serious violations.
Yes, Your Honor. that conclusion is erroneous. The failure not executing a sentence at this time in this case would not unduly depreciate the seriousness of the violations for the reasons that, one, he had already served 15 months, and two, he had been he was essentially perfect on parole. And so the conclusion of the court is just outweighed by the evidence in the record. And I just have to mention the timer has vanished on my screen. So I don't know how much time I have.
Counsel, you have 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Are you in the grid view currently?
It was there for a while. I just don't know where it went. It just vanished.
Okay. You have 2 minutes and okay. 20. The marshal stopped the clock and we'll start it again now. It's currently at 2 minutes and 22 seconds. To see if you can readjust your grid view.
No, that's fine, Your Honor.
Ms. Torgerson, I understand the argument and the fact that your client has done so well on parole, that he's been discharged earlier, that's the recommendation, I mean, does speak to his recent abilities to remain law-abiding and to abide by probationary conditions. But it feels like you're asking us to substitute our judgment for that of the district court. So I'm wondering kind of what would be the principled basis? What would we say in our order if we reached the conclusion you're urging that the district court abused its discretion? Why? What is it about the decision that constitutes abuse of discretion?
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. This case is supposed to be decided on the law and the facts. The law states that, unless the evidence shows that the need for confinement outweighs the policies favoring probation, that then the probation is not supposed to be revoked. So his probation was not supposed to be revoked in June 2022. A different question might have been presented in June of 2019 or even June of 2020. he had completely rehabilitated himself. The evidence showed beyond any reasonable doubt that there was no need for confinement. And even if a court considers the factor unduly, would unduly depreciate the seriousness of the offense, it doesn't eliminate the requirement that the need for confinement has to outweigh the policies favoring probation. And if he's been doing exceptionally well on parole for 3 years, that proves that there is no need for confinement at that time. The evidence is that the treatment had not failed. It was working in 2022, by 2022. And it was not a last resort, and execution of the sentence should not be imposed. If probation is not supposed to be revoked, then it is an abuse of discretion to have revoked it. So based on the law and the evidence in this case, the revocation of probation should be reversed. I presume my time is up.
Perfect timing, thank you. All right, counsel for respondent, are you able to see the timer in the grid view currently?
I am.
Okay, great. You can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Abby Wakilius. I'm an assistant Lyon County attorney appearing today on behalf of respondent, State of Minnesota. When the district court revoked Bert Strom's probation and made findings related to the third Austin factor, the court did not abuse its discretion and instead made its findings based on the applicable law and the facts at hand. The court found that the defendant's conduct would unduly depreciate the seriousness of the violation if probation was not revoked, thus made the finding pursuant to the third Motlin subfactor. The information before the court that supported this was the defendant's egregious conduct while he was on probation. The defendant left the state of Minnesota after being dishonest with his probation agent regarding his whereabouts. Probation only learned of the defendant's location after they were contacted by law enforcement in the state of Illinois regarding the defendant's arrest for a battery case against his 11-year-old son. The defendant was arrested in the state of Illinois, subsequently released on bail, and again did not return to the state of Minnesota. At that time, the probation agent filed the initial probation violation report. At no time did appellant contact probation, and appellant was again arrested in the state of Illinois on July 2nd of 2018, that time for a felony domestic battery against his then wife, the victim of the underlying third degree assault in this case.
Counsel, I don't think there's any dispute that the violations were serious here, obviously serious enough to warrant felony convictions in the state of Illinois. But I think that we need to, or I'm interested in how you respond to Ms. Torgerson's argument that despite the serious nature of the violations, by the time this came back to the court for the probation revocation hearing in 2022, you're looking at a person who has had consequences and has been successful on parole for a period of 3 years. That's an unusual record. What evidence supports the determination that that confinement is needed at this sort of late stage in the game?
Well, I think first one must consider the plain language of the third Motlin subfactor that requires the court to look at the the nature of the underlying violation. Secondly, this standard of review, as the court is aware, is an abuse of discretion. The record is clear that the court did contrary to the state's argument that the defendant's subsequent behavior while on parole in the state of Illinois wasn't relevant. The court said, no, that is relevant, and weighed that behavior against the serious nature of the underlying violations and concluded that in this case, that the seriousness of the violation was such that it would still, despite this would unduly depreciate the seriousness of the violation.
Ms. Wakilius, would you agree that the record shows that Mr. Strom was doing exceptionally well on parole for 3 years, as appellant's counsel argued?
I believe that there was a letter in the record from his parole agent from the state of Illinois that stated that he was in compliance with his parole conditions in Illinois. However, I would further argue that while the violation is premised on his behavior and his criminal conduct in the state of Illinois that led to him being placed on Illinois, the appropriate inquiry here involves his behavior while he was on probation in the state of Minnesota. The sentence that the defendant served in the state of Illinois was based on that conduct. He would not receive any credit under Minnesota law for his time in Illinois. And so, while he was doing well, I think that they are two separate inquiries that the court, just because a person was successful on parole, should not alleviate their responsibility for their poor conduct while on probation in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you for that response.
And again, because the court did consider this positive report from the parole agent in Illinois, the state does not believe that there is any legal authority for the state to disregard the law from Motlin and Austin and excuse the defendant's conduct underlying these probation violations and reverse the district court. If the court has...
You talk about excusing the violations. I don't think Ms. Torgerson is arguing that the violations should be excused. I think what she's arguing is that the consequence should be something less than revocation of probation, given the fact that of his good performance on parole for the last 3 years. I mean, isn't that really the inquiry?
Yes, I believe that. Yes, I mean, the district court could have made a determination that this because of this, you know, positive behavior these last 3 years in the state of Illinois, that it wouldn't unduly depreciate the seriousness of the violation. But ultimately, it is the inquiry needs to be whether the district court abused its discretion in determining that this 3 years of compliant behavior was not enough to outweigh the very concerning and non-technical violations that the defendant initially committed. Furthermore, the state is unaware of any legal authority that would support the proposition that a defendant who is on supervision for a felony assault against a victim who then commits a subsequent felony assault against that same victim, that wouldn't suffice as being a significant enough violation to warrant the revocation of probation. And so I would conclude and ask that the court affirm the district court's revocation of appellant's probation. If there were any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them, but I thank you for your time and attention today.
All right, thank you. Seeing no further questions from the panel, we'll turn to Ms. Torgerson for any rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. The test herein, as established under Austin, is whether the evidence established that the need for imprisoning Mr. Strom in June 2022 outweighed the policies favoring probation. And the answer is no. Herein, the evidence established that there was no need for confinement of Mr. Strom. And he was also still on Minnesota probation the entire time he was on parole in Illinois. So there's no distinction between the two. His parole was working, his probation was working. He had been in counseling for 2 years. His alcohol abuse was in remission. He had become gainfully employed. He was in school, establishing a new career. He had obtained full custody of his two minor children. There were two letters submitted, one from his counselor and one from his parole officer. So that's the evidence. In this case, he was remarried. He had remained law-abiding. The instant offense for which he's on probation at that time was 6 years old. At the time of the probation revocation, his offense in Illinois was 4 years old, and he had already served 15 months in prison for his offenses in Illinois. He had zero parole violations. His counselor provided a glowing letter on his behalf, as did his parole officer. He had
Ms. Torgerson, you do a nice job explaining how well he did on parole. Can you point us to any case where this court has, or an appellate, or the Supreme Court has found that it was an abuse of discretion to revoke probation in circumstances similar to this, where someone, you know, well, basically that.
No, Your Honor. I believe that cases of this nature are so unique that I don't know if there is like a similar case, but he had earlier tried to have his probation violations addressed, and it is wrong for the government to delay punishing Mr. Strom only, or and then and allow him to engage in complete rehabilitation and then send him back to prison. He was doing so well on parole, his Illinois parole officer was going to discharge him early. So this evidence establishes that there was no need to confine Mr. Strom at this time. This establishes that it was an abuse of discretion for the trial court to, at this time, revoke Mr. Strom's probation and send him back to prison. And given that he had already served 15 months in prison, that establishes that failure to execute his sentence would not unduly depreciate the seriousness of his violations. And it's the evidence certainly did not support such a severe sentence as to warrant a departure. The court even filed a departure report. And on the report, it says unamenable to probation. Well, for the past 3 years, he was amenable to probation. So that is contrary to the evidence. The evidence proved that treatment had not failed, whereby it was not a last resort and execution of sentence should not have been imposed.
I was going to ask you about that departure report, because on the warrant of commitment, the judge indicated that it was not a departure. I don't think it was a departure, and it seems like the court reporter filed the departure report.
No.
Do you think the sentence was the revocation? Do you think that was a departure?
Yes, Your Honor. Ms. Wickelius, even when this appeal was pending, filed a challenge in court, and Judge Zimmer even responded to that and said, no, this is a departure. So under all those circumstances, the trial court abused its discretion when it revoked Mr. Strom's probation and executed a 15-month prison term, and Mr. Strom would respectfully request that that be reversed. Thank you.
Great. Seeing no further questions from the panel, I'll thank both counsel for your helpful arguments here today. We will issue our decision within the statutory timeframe.